in the Enterprise briefing room.
They're quite large. 7 feet tall is not unusual. They're extremely fast and strong. Lieutenant?
Uhura brings up some video.
Make no mistake, they can be highly dangerous. The Capellan's basic weapon, the Kligat, at any distance, up to 100 yards, they can make it almost as effective against a man as a phaser. In addition to this, an assortment of swords and knives.
Call from the bridge, Captain.
Bridge, helm, sir.
Yes, Mr. Sulu. Report.
Now in standard orbit, sir. I've pinpointed their encampment below.
Very good. Have the transporter room stand by.
Aye, sir.
How long were you stationed on the planet, Doctor?
Only a few months. We found them totally uninterested in medical aid or hospitals.
They believe that only the strong should survive. Analysis, gentlemen.
Ordinarily, under these circumstances, I would recommend a large, well-armed landing party.
Yes, but in this case, with the more people we take down, the greater chance we have of violating one of their taboos.
Agreed. Once they've got it into their heads, we're showing force you can forget them signing any mining treaty.
Very well. Scotty, you're in command. Bear in mind that the Klingons have been sighted in this sector. While we're negotiating down there, we don't want the Enterprise to become an incident up here.
Aye, sir. We'll keep on our toes.
They leave. On the planet's surface, Capellans dressed in brightly colored outfits with long capes, fur scarves, and boots wander around a tented encampment. Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and a security guard, Grant, beam down to a landscape of brown sand and pale rocky outcrops right on the edge of the encampment.
Halt!
A party of Capellans approach Kirk and his men.
You are of the Earth vessel?
I am Captain Kirk.
We come with open hearts and hands.
A Klingon appears.
A Klingon! Grant, no!
Grant is hit.
Don't move us!
Kirk and McCoy hold the stricken guard.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. Friday's Child, written by D.C. Fontana, directed by Joseph Pevney.
Captain's log, stardate 3497.2, planet Capella 4. The rare mineral topoline, vital to the life support systems of planetoid colonies, has been discovered in abundance here. Our mission? Obtain a mining agreement. But we have discovered a Klingon agent has preceded us to the planet, a discovery which has cost the life of one of my crewmen.
The Klingon.
I am unaware of any state of war between our peoples, Captain. Or is it your policy to kill Klingons on sight?
An expression of suppressed rage crosses Kirk's face.
He was young and inexperienced.
Does Maiv know that the Klingons are our sworn enemies? By their own words?
We understand only that he also offers things of value for our rocks. And he has freely handed us his weapons and other devices.
Kirk looks round at the Capellans surrounding them.
Will you do the same?
Let me call my ship and inform
Bring
them.
Down an attack upon their village. It is as I told you, Maiv. Earthmen fear to bargain honestly.
Will you hand us your weapons?
Kirk is standing over the body of the dead guard who was brought down by a Capellan Kligat, the small three-bladed throwing disc McCoy discussed at the briefing. Reluctantly, Kirk unclips his phaser from his belt and throws it to the ground. Spock and McCoy do likewise. Later, Kirk looks out from a tent guarded by two Capellans. Inside, are McCoy and Spock.
So they keep their word scrupulously. They're unusually honest. Is that what I heard you say in the briefing room, Doctor?
Yes, I mentioned that.
He also mentioned that they can be highly dangerous.
Dangerous if lied to. If their customs are violated, well, we lied to no one, Doctor. We violated no customs. Perhaps you'll explain to me why one of my men is dead.
Because he was drawing a weapon on another of their guests.
Grant looked up, saw a Klingon, made a purely instinctive defensive move. And what's a Klingon doing down here among your scrupulously honest friends anyway?
McCoy looks down.
Look, Jim, I know what it means to you to lose a crewman.
It's only one down, Doctor. There's over 400 more up there in orbit. And if there's a Klingon down here, there might be a Klingon ship up there somewhere.
Mr. Scott.
On board the Enterprise.
Picking up something on the sensors, sir. Seems to be another ship.
Well, let's put it on the screen.
Scotty and Chekhov look up at the screen.
It's just at the edge of our sensor range, sir. Hard to get an exact reading.
You think it's a Klingon ship?
Who else would be playing cat and mouse with a starship?
Well, you can't hurt us much out there bobbing about like that. No need to call a captain yet.
Chekhov studies the small, intense dot of light on the screen above the science station. In the Capellan tent, Kirk paces restlessly. Spock and McCoy sit by a fire in a metal brazier, deep in thought.
Bones.
Yes, Captain.
I shouldn't have chewed you out. I'm sorry.
I understand.
McCoy smiles.
Inefficient, however. Emotion, Captain.
Yes, you're quite right, Mr. Spock. Inefficient. And illogical.
A beautiful young woman carrying a bowl of fruit is let into the tent. She kneels before Kirk.
You've shown friendship by handing over our weapons. And she's making a gesture in return.
The woman offers a piece of fruit to Kirk.
Jim.
Kirk looks at McCoy, confused.
If you touch it, her nearest male relative will have to try to kill you. They're offering you a chance for combat. They consider it more pleasurable than love.
An imperious Capellan enters the tent.
Chura.
Kirk looks up uncertainly.
It would appear, Captain, that he finds you a disappointment.
Kirk shrugs. Later, the warrior escorts Kirk, Spock, and McCoy into another tent with woven rugs on the floor and walls. An older man, flanked by guards, is seated on a wooden throne.
I am the Te'er Aka'ar. I lead the 10 tribes of Capella.
An attractive blonde woman with a regal bearing comes into the tent and looks directly at Kirk before sitting.
And this is Elian, a young wife, to give an old man a son to rule these tribes.
I'm Captain Kirk. First of all, I must protest the killing of one of my crewmen.
If it was your man, was it not his privilege to die for you? I do not understand.
Their customs are different, Te'er.
And different from those of my people too, Te'er. The sight of death frightens them.
Let me take this, Jim. What Ma'ab has said is true. Our customs are different. What the Klingon has said is unimportant, and we do not hear his words. I just called the Klingon a liar.
Laughter, Te'er? Is not the Klingon an honored guest also?
It was the Earth people who first bargained for our rocks.
Is it not best to have two who bargain for the same goods?
It is I who speak for the tribe, Mob.
I speak for many, Te'er. Hear the words of the Klingon.
What do Earthmen offer you? What have you obtained from them in the past? Powders? and liquids for the sick. We Klingons believe as you do. The sick should die. Only the strong should live. Earthmen have promised to teach the youth of your tribes many things. What? What things? Cleverness against enemies? The use of weapons?
The Klingon speaks the truth, Akar.
Kras, the Klingon, grins smugly.
The Earth Federation offers one other thing, Akar. Our laws. And the highest of all our laws states that your world is yours and will always remain yours. This differs us from the Klingons. Their empire is made up of conquered worlds. They take what they want by arms and force.
Good, good. Let the Klingons and the Earthmen offer us amusement. Capellans welcome this.
The Earthmen have different customs, but never have they lied to our people.
There are those of us who will not bargain with Earthmen, Akar.
Akar stands.
Do you say you will fight me, Mob?
Mob looks stony-faced at Akar.
Let that be your choice, Tyr.
Mob leaves, followed by Kras, who salutes Akar. Kale, the warrior Kirk refused to fight, joins them.
We need our communicators, those devices on our belts. If there's a Klingon ship somewhere...
The sky does not interest me. I must consider the words I have heard.
Elaen stands before Akar and addresses Kirk.
Leave him.
Kirk, Spock, and McCoy file out of the tent. On board the Enterprise, Chekov scans the viewscreen at Spock's console. The white dot vanishes. He recalibrates the controls.
The ship's disappeared, sir. Gone out of range.
Scotty hurries up.
Mr. Scott, I'm getting a call from a vessel. So faint, I can't make it out.
Put a booster on it, Lieutenant. Try to pull it in.
I've lost it. It sounded like a distress signal from an Earth vessel.
Scotty looks sharply at Uhura, then turns away with a grim expression. On the planet's surface, a fight breaks out between two factions of knife-wielding Capellans. Kirk comes out of his tent. A Capellan lunges at him with a knife. Kirk disarms him with a swift kick. Kirk takes the man's knife, and he, Spock, and McCoy run over to the main body of tents, where the Tyr, Akar, is defending himself. In the melee, Mar, who seems to be leading the attack, deftly brings down a Capellan with his Kligat. Kras, the Klingon, is desperately searching for something in the Tyr's tent when Kirk, Spock, and McCoy burst in on him.
Klingon!
Communicators, weapons.
I have no quarrel with you, Captain. I wish merely to return to my vessel.
Kras lunges at Kirk with a knife. Kirk overpowers him.
Hypervessel, location.
A small scout ship, Captain. We need the mineral, too. I was sent to negotiate.
Release him.
Marb, entering the tent, puts a knife at Kirk's throat. Marb's guards move threateningly towards Spock and McCoy. Kirk releases the Klingon from his grip.
Akar is dead. I am the Tyr.
Kill him now.
Wait.
Kirk stands before Marb.
If you lead these people now, be certain you make the right decisions.
Is a new leader of the 10 tribes afraid? Let me kill them for you.
Or let the Klingon and me fight. It might amuse you.
Perhaps to be a Tyr is to see in new ways. I begin to like you, Earthman. And I saw fear in the Klingon's eye.
We had an agreement.
Marb looks from Kras to Kirk.
That too may change Klingon.
On board the Enterprise.
I have the signal clear now, Mr. Scott. It is a distress call. It's from the SS Deirdre.
Deirdre? That's a freighter.
Reporting they're under attack. They're running. Trying to maneuver. It's a Klingon vessel attacking.
Well, picking it up, sir. Taking a fix. Try the captain.
Enterprise to Captain Kirk. Come in, Captain. Enterprise to Captain Kirk. Come in, Captain.
Elaine is ushered into the Tier's tent. Marb trips her with his sword. As she falls, she clutches the burning brazier.
Captain, careful.
Elaine sinks to the floor.
You carry a child who would be Tier.
I must die.
Marb raises his sword above Elaine's head.
No!
Before Marb can strike Elaine, Kirk pulls her away and kicks Marb in the stomach. Kirk, Spock and McCoy try to hold off the Capellan guards who wade into the fight, but they are outnumbered and have no weapons. Kirk is beaten to the ground, where Capellan swords hover above him, inches away from his face. Kirk slowly gets to his feet to face Marb.
No man may touch the wife of a Tier.
She was prepared to die, Earthman.
I was proud to obey the laws. Kill him first.
She looks at Kirk.
He laid hands upon me. It is my right to see him die.
On board the Enterprise.
Enterprise to Mr. Spock. Dr. McCoy, come in, please.
Scotty joins Chekhov on the gallery.
I have it on the sensors, sir. Tie into my channel, Lieutenant.
Right in.
Commanding, we are under heavy attack by Klingon vessels. Two convoy ships are already damaged. We must have help. Enterprise, acknowledge. Please acknowledge. Repeat.
Scotty slowly crosses the bridge to the con with a grim, determined expression.
Interception course computed. And laid in, sir.
Prepare to take us out of orbit, Mr. Sulu.
Aye, sir.
Uhura comes over to Scotty.
Scotty, the captain.
We have a distress call from a Federation ship under attack. That's where our duty lies.
Troubled, Uhura returns to her console.
Take us out of orbit, Mr. Sulu. Ahead, Warp 5.
The Enterprise flies away from Capella 4.
Captain's log, stardate 3498.9. Lieutenant Commander Scott in temporary command. We were forced to leave Capella to come to the aid of a Federation vessel under attack by a Klingon vessel.
A crewman hands Scott a report pad to sign.
We were unable to contact our landing party before we were forced to answer the distress signal. Our inability to reach the landing party is strange, and I am concerned.
Our check-in signal is 1 hour, 12 minutes overdue. Since no reconnaissance party has appeared, and since Mr. Scott is notably efficient in such matters...
I must assume that something's keeping them busy up there, the Klingon ship.
That would seem a logical conclusion.
Captain, I'm gonna fix that woman's arm. They can only kill me once for touching her.
Kirk looks round at the two guards by the door.
That's a very good idea, Bones.
Yes, Captain. An excellent idea.
As McCoy approaches Elaine, who sits rocking in pain, Kirk and Spock stand affecting nonchalance.
Let me see that arm.
It will not touch me.
Spock dispatches one guard with a Vulcan nerve pinch while Kirk karate chops the other to the ground. He lunges at Elaine with a knife.
You said you prepare to die. Does that mean you prefer to die? I think we can get you safely to the ship. Your choice.
To live is always desirable.
All right, let's go.
Kirk checks the coast is clear, and they make their escape. At his army encampment, Marb keeps a close watch on the Klingon Kras.
Klingon! There's nothing to concern you there.
Kras, who was heading towards the Tyr's tent, turns back to Marb.
We've made an agreement, Marb. I have a right to my weapons.
We have them well cared for, Klingon. Your weapon will be returned when our business is completed. That was our agreement.
Aft phaser, permanent. Engineering the bridge.
Approaching the freighter's last reported position, sir.
Sensor report, Mr. Chekhov.
Negative, sir. No debris, no residual particles, no traces.
Mr. Sulu, begin a standard search pattern. All scanners, full intensity, Mr. Chekhov. No signal at all.
Negative, sir.
It should be on our screens by now.
At best, a freighter might travel warp 2.
I'm well aware of a freighter's maximum speed, Mr. Sulu.
Sulu looks chastised.
Captain's log, stardate 3499.1. Before leaving the Capellan encampment, we managed to retrieve our communicators. Our phasers were not to be found. We have fled into the hills, yet we know the Capellans will eventually find us, by scent alone if necessary. And we have learned one thing more. The girl, Ellien, hates the unborn child she is carrying. Stay with her, Bones.
Kirk and Spock stop on a pass leading through a rocky canyon. McCoy and Ellien carry on.
Nice place to get trapped in.
But a defensible entrance, Captain.
Kirk scans the surroundings.
Yes, I see. Scout up the trail that way, see what we have in the way of an exit. I'll take a look around.
Now listen, you may be a Capellan woman and the widow of a high T heir, but I'm a doctor, and it's my tradition to care for the sick and injured.
Ellien gives McCoy a defiant look, which he returns. She sits.
Now let me see that arm.
Under McCoy's challenging stare, she holds out her burnt arm for examination. McCoy takes a pouch from his belt, selects a tiny canister, and holds it over the burn, shaking it. Ellien looks down at the red mark on her forearm in wonder. Kirk spots a column of Capellans in the distance approaching the canyon. From his high vantage point, he checks out the surrounding canyon walls, takes out his communicator, and looks at it as if considering all the options available to him. McCoy uses a small scanner to monitor Elaine's unborn baby. He touches her stomach. She haughtily pushes his hand away.
You will not touch me in that manner.
Now you listen to me, young woman. I'll touch you in any way or manner that my professional judgment indicates.
Elaine slaps McCoy's face. He touches her again. He slaps her. With a stern look, McCoy continues the examination. Ellien looks on, dazed.
Just as I thought. It can come any time now.
How do you know?
Because I'm a doctor, that's how I know.
Even the women of our village cannot tell so much with a touch. Strange hand. Very soft.
She puts her hand over McCoy's just as Spock appears. McCoy looks embarrassed and pulls his hand away. He and Spock exchange a look, and Spock carries on along the track. Kirk meets Spock coming down the pass. They both watch the column of Capellans gradually coming closer.
The walls get higher and narrower, but there is a way out.
Good. If we could block off that entrance, hold them off, it'd give us more time. They'd have to go around these hills.
There is enough loose rock and shale.
Do you think we could create a sonic disruption with two of our communicators?
Only a very slight chance it would work.
Well, if you don't think we can, maybe we shouldn't try.
Captain, I didn't say that exactly.
They both take out their communicators and begin adjusting them as they head back up the pass. Hidden behind a rock overlooking the pass, Spock and Kirk fine-tune their communicators. Kirk looks down to see the Capellans almost directly below them.
Sound beams should produce a sympathetic vibration on the weak area of that slide.
They concentrate their beams on the rock face opposite. They watch anxiously as Marv leads the small band of Capellans into the pass. Hearing the high-pitched noise, they falter, looking up and around in confusion. Marv signals his men to stop. Kirk and Spock, daggers in hand, look to the top of the canyon wall opposite. Leaving their communicators on the rock, they run for cover as the Capellans pass right beneath them. A huge explosion sends a torrent of rock down on the Capellans. Falling boulders crash down on them. With the dust from the rockfall clearing, Kras the Klingon emerges from the smoke. He rifles the body of a fallen Capellan, finds a phaser and hides it in his boot. Sensing the Capellan isn't dead, he takes the man's dagger and stabs him, then joins Marv and his companion Deum, who survey the carnage. Marv points to where they can climb the canyon wall. Kirk and McCoy stand out of earshot of Elaine.
Worried about the delivery?
Capellans aren't human, Jim. They're humanoid. There are certain internal differences. I don't have the equipment to handle an emergency.
Well, if you don't think you're going to handle it...
Forget it. I can do it. The last thing I want around is a ham-handed ship's captain.
McCoy returns to watch over Elaine as Kirk moves off in the opposite direction. Kirk makes his way up a steep, rocky path. Once at the top, he takes a breather and surveys the dry scrubland. Seeing no Capellans in the area, he veers off through a narrow cleft between two rocks. The Capellans and Kras are almost on top of Kirk, forcing him to flee back to where Spock, McCoy, and Elaine are waiting. The pregnant Elaine is struggling to get up the steep path, and Kirk puts out a hand to help her up.
No, only McCoy.
There's a cave in there, probably the only shelter around here.
I'll need help getting her in there.
No.
Look, I'm a doctor, not an escalator. Spock, give me a hand.
No. I will allow only your touch.
McCoy helps Elaine to negotiate the rocky path to the cave. The Capellans advance across the rocky terrain. On board the Enterprise...
A vessel doesn't just disappear.
Scotty turns to Uhura.
There's nothing, Mr. Scott. All channels and frequencies are clear.
Mr. Chekhov.
Nothing, sir. If it were destroyed, I'd pick up debris readings of some sort.
Scotty steps down to the con, keeping his eyes on the forward view screen.
It couldn't have run away from us, sir. Not a freighter.
The screen shows only stars in the void of space.
Mr. Chekhov, pull the microtape on that distress call. I want it replayed.
Chekhov slots the data file into the player.
Commanding, we are under heavy attack by Klingon vessels. Two convoy ships are already damaged. We must have help. Enterprise, acknowledge. Please acknowledge.
Did you hear it? They called us by name. Not a general distress signal, but one aimed right at us.
Would they normally call for the nearest starship?
How would a freighter know we were ordered into this sector?
Trent. We were diverted from the planet.
Scott paces the bridge, hands behind his back.
Or it could be an authentic distress call.
We'll stay long enough to make certain. Continue search pattern.
Yes, sir. Continue.
On Capella, Kirk leads Spock, McCoy, and Elaine into the darkness of the cave.
Sloane, you've got one of those Magnesite Nitron tablets in your kit. Give me one.
Just a minute. Let me get her on the rock.
McCoy hands Kirk the small Magnesite Nitron tablet. He places it on a rock and strikes it with his knife. It bursts into flame, illuminating the cave.
No, no, pain is here.
McCoy feels Elaine's stomach for the pain.
How'd you arrange to touch her bones, give her a happy pill?
No, a right cross.
Never seen that in a medical book.
Send mine from now on.
Kirk gives a dry nod and goes outside the cave. McCoy touches Elaine's stomach.
Oh, no. It's there. The pain is there.
Outside, Spock examines a shrub.
Vegetation, Captain. Evidently, there's water nearby.
Good. But we need weapons just as much as we need water, Spock.
There would seem to be little weapon potential at hand.
Follow me.
No! McCoy!
Oh. Easy. Easy, I'm here. Now, you must want the child.
No. Here, child belongs to husband.
So they take all the credit here. Poppycock. Answer me. Do you want my help?
He seizes her chin.
Answer me. Do you want my help?
She nods.
All right. Say to yourself, the child is mine. The child is mine. It is mine.
Yes. It's yours.
No. No, you've got it all wrong.
Yes. McCoy. It's yours.
No. Say to yourself, the child is mine. It is mine. It is...
She smiles with a peculiar expression, then frowns in pain.
Uh-oh.
Kirk to Enterprise, come in. Kirk to Enterprise, come in.
At the cave mouth, Kirk and Spock have made bows from the stunted trees. Kirk tests the flexibility of his bow.
Fortunately, this bark has suitable tensile cohesion.
You mean it makes a good bowstring?
I believe I said that.
That's more like it.
He fits a crude arrow to the bowstring.
Since the Capellans never developed the bow, this may come as a bigger surprise as gunpowder was on Earth.
McCoy comes out of the cave smiling, wiping his neck and hands with a cloth. He nods in the direction of the cave, and Kirk and Spock follow him inside. Elaine is sleeping by the light of the nitron flame. McCoy picks up a small bundle and proudly shows it to Kirk and Spock. He gives the wrapped baby to the startled Vulcan.
No, no, Mr. Spock, that isn't the way you place this arm under here to support its back and this hand here to support its head.
I would rather not. Thank you.
McCoy, bring our child.
Our child?
I'll explain later.
That should prove very interesting.
McCoy bends down to place the baby gently in Elaine's arms. He looks up disapprovingly at Kirk and Spock, staring idly at this intimate scene. They sheepishly turn away. On board the Enterprise.
Still negative, Mr. Scott. All sweeps.
Mr. Chekhov.
Nothing.
We're turning back. Warp 5, Helm.
Warp 5, sir. On course for Capella 4.
Warp 6 as soon as you'll take it, Mr. Sulu. The captain could be in trouble back there.
Mr. Scott, another distress call from the USS Carolina.
Ignore it.
Mr. Scott, the Carolina is registered in the sector.
Ignore it, Lieutenant. Log it as my order, my responsibility.
Aye, aye, sir.
Scotty, if it should turn out to be real.
There's an old saying on Earth, Mr. Sulu. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
I know this saying. It was invented in Russia.
Scott and Sulu look in disbelief at Chekhov, who smiles broadly into his monitor. In the cave, McCoy has fallen asleep, resting on a rock beside Elaine. She checks to see if he is sleeping, very slowly eases herself up, and reaches for a large stone nearby. She brings the rock down across McCoy's head, and without hesitation, runs to the cave entrance. Glancing briefly around, she slips away. High on the canyon rim, Spock and Kirk scan the horizon, bows in hand.
Jim! Spock!
Kirk and Spock hurry down from the rock.
Jim! Spock!
What happened, Lucy? My patient spattered me with a rock. She's gone.
The child?
It's all right. It's in there. I guess I'll forget psychiatry. Stick with surgery. I really thought she'd learn to want it.
Virtue is a relative term, Doctor. She'll head straight to the Warriors.
I'll go with you.
Bones, you took a medical oath long before you signed aboard my ship. That small patient in there needs you.
Kirk and Spock leave McCoy rubbing his head ruefully. He goes back into the cave. On board the Enterprise, Scotty goes over to Sulu at the helm.
Estimating the planet?
31 minutes, sir.
Mr. Scott?
Scotty hurries over to Chekhov.
Sensors picking up a vessel ahead, cutting across our path.
Sublight 1/2.
Reversing to sublight 1/2.
It's an alien, sir. A configuration, a Klingon warship. Taking position directly in our path.
Mr. Sulu, sound battle stations.
Aye, aye, sir.
A red alert sign flashes on and off, and a viewfinder rises from the helm at Sulu's side.
This is the USS Enterprise calling unidentified Klingon vessel. Come in. USS Enterprise calling Klingon vessel. Acknowledge, please.
I have it on the view screen now, sir. Still distant. Holding a position dead ahead, sir.
Drawing a line, daring us to step over it.
Still closing. The alien's directly in our line of flight.
The Klingon ship glows bright green and yellow on the view screen.
This is the commander of the USS Enterprise. Identify yourself and your intention. Acknowledge.
The ship's image grows larger.
Close out the frequency, Lieutenant.
Laser banks are ready, sir.
And we'll go right down their throat if necessary. Let's see if they have the belly for it.
On the planet's surface, Marb's surviving Capellans march down a path that crosses a small valley Kirk and Spock lie in wait on the opposite slope, either side of the path, behind a ridge of rock. Marb sends DM forward to scout the way ahead. DM spots Kirk peering over the top of the rocks. He hurries back to where Marb waits with Kras the Vulcan and the 8 surviving Capellan warriors.
Behind the rocks up there.
The Earthmen make excellent game. Their cleverness has surprised me.
They must die. That is your law.
We will honor our law and our word to you, Klingon.
Dien looks across the valley to where Elaine is making her way unsteadily down a rocky path towards them. Marb watches without expression as she comes up to him.
The child is dead, Marb. Do as you will with me.
The Earthmen?
Dead. I killed them as they slept.
She pushes past Marb. Kras turns to her.
If true, take us to them.
Do you doubt my word, Klingon? I'm the wife of a Tyr. I will die in my own tent.
Marb watches her go.
It is in order. She is the wife of a Tyr.
Kras presses on.
No! First, we verify her story.
Is this what your sworn word means, Klingon?
Kirk fires an arrow. It hits Kras in the thigh. He tries to pull it out. A Capellan hurls a Kligat at Kirk. It misses. Spock shoots another Capellan and dodges a Kligat. Elaine rushes towards Kras to try to get the phaser he's dropped, but Kras gets to it first. He sees Spock fitting another arrow to his bow and fires at him. The rock at Spock's side explodes.
Spock! Spock!
Here, Captain.
Kirk heads towards Spock.
Over here, Captain.
Spock flips open his communicator.
Spock to Enterprise.
The cavalry doesn't come over the hill in the nick of time anymore.
If by that you mean we can't expect help from the Enterprise, I must agree.
DM.
Kras shoots the Capellan.
There's just one thing I want.
The Klingon?
One of us must get him.
Revenge, Captain?
Kirk looks round at Spock.
Why not?
The next man who raises a weapon destroys all of you. You and your primitive knives and weapons. I'll teach you what killing really means.
Klingon!
Kras swings round to face Kirk. Elaine runs back to Marb.
Fight! Are you warriors or children? Marb, I will flee. When the Klingon turns to fire, I'll...
Marb draws his knife.
As Tyr of the 10 tribes, I give you back your life. Mine is now forfeit. Ki'il, stand ready.
Marb breaks cover and stands with his arms raised in a defiant gesture.
Klingon!
Kras fires at him. He glows green, then vanishes. DM flings a Kligat, which lodges in Kras's chest. He crashes to the ground. DM looks round at the surviving Capellans. They start to move forward to where the Klingon's body lies. Kirk and Spock move out from behind their cover and cautiously approach the Capellans, who are examining Kras's body. The Klingon doesn't move. As Kirk and Spock approach, the Capellans back away. Scotty, leading an armed rescue party, runs up to the Capellans.
Hold it there. Drop your weapons.
They do as they are bidden. McCoy appears, with Elaine's baby in his arms. Gratefully, she takes it from him. Scotty goes over to Kirk and Spock.
We missed you, Mr. Scott.
Well, sir, we had a wee bit of a run-in with a Klingon vessel, but he had no stomach for fighting. We checked the encampment, found out you were here, and had no trouble at all in tracking you down. I could...
No, that's not the way to handle it. Here, like this. Here, take his little head like that. There. Arm in a... That's it. See how easy?
Oochie-woochie-coochie-coo. Oochie-woochie-coochie-coo.
Oochie-woochie-coochie-coo, Captain. An obscure Earth dialect, Mr. Spock. Oochie coochie coochie coo. If you're curious, consult linguistics.
Well, at any rate, this should prove interesting.
Interesting?
When the woman starts explaining how the new High Tier is actually Dr. McCoy's child.
What's that again, Mr. Spock? We don't actually understand it ourselves, Mr. Scott.
Nor does Dr. McCoy.
Oochie woochie coochie coo. Oochie woochie coochie coo.
Back on board the Enterprise.
Contact Starfleet. Inform them that Federation mining rights on Capella have been secured by treaty, documents signed by the young High Chief's regent. Report follows.
Aye, aye, sir.
Child's regent?
Yes, Elaine. Remarkable young lady.
Representing the High Tier, Leonard James Akkar.
The child was named Leonard James Akkar.
Has a kind of a ring to it, don't you think, James?
Yes, I think it's a name destined to go down in galactic history, Leonard. What do you think, Spock?
I think you're both going to be insufferably pleased with yourselves for at least a month. Sir.
Kirk and McCoy grin as Spock turns proudly away.
Take us out of orbit, Mr. Sulu. Ahead, warp factor one.
This audio description was written and produced by IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.